listening to Inclusive AF with Jackie Clayton and Katie Van Horn.
All right. Welcome to the Inclusive AF podcast. This is Katie Van Horn, and I am not joined by my amazing co-host today, but I do have a really awesome guest. And so I'm very, very excited to have this conversation and to share it with you all. So I am going to just turn it over immediately. And Shai, would love for you to introduce yourself and share a little bit about who you are and what you are doing.
Sure. Thank you so much. It is so nice to meet you, Katie, and I'm super excited to be here with you. To introduce myself, my name is Shai, and I am currently the head of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging at NerdWallet. For those of you that don't know, NerdWallet is an awesome company, and of course, I'm biased, that is all about empowering folks to make sound financial decisions. So if you're looking to be more financially literate, and it's interesting, prior to joining NerdWallet, I thought I was financially literate. And as I'm learning more and as I am getting more embedded in the organization, I'm like, man, there was so much that I didn't know. So I highly encourage everyone to download the app, view our content, because even if you think you are financially literate, there's always stuff to learn. And that's what we are essentially in the business to do. I am born and raised in Los Angeles, California. I always joke that every time I tried to leave, an opportunity presented itself that just signal to me that this is where I'm supposed to be, and it's not a bad place to be, right? For the most part, we get great weather, very diverse. People are cool, regardless of what you hear out there. We're probably some of the best people out there. Again, another bias. And as a DEI person, I'm like, I should probably chill on the biases. I have pretty much been doing DEI, or an intersection of learning and development, diversity and inclusion, and what I call talent strategy and culture and engagement for the last 6 or 7 years, almost 7 years. And essentially for me, as someone that is very passionate about social justice, as I started to make my mark in the world, I really wanted to impact this space in a very unique way. And for me, that calling came through the organization. We spend most of our time at work, right? And a lot of, you know, who we are and the quality of life that we live, whether we believe it or not, or whether we realize it or not, is associated with, you know, the work that we do and the workspaces that we're in. And so for me, I felt like my advocacy in this space belonged in the workplace. And so I am very passionate about helping organizations understand that people are your number one asset. You can have the greatest product in the world, and if you don't have an engaged workforce that feels that sense of belonging, that really feels empowered to do their best work, not only do you run the risk of not maximizing your success as an organization, you leave a lot of jar of hearts, right? And I'm sure we're going to dive deeper in this conversation, and I can share, you know, endless stories, not unique to my current environment. And I'll try to leave the companies that I've worked for out of the conversation. However, I'm happy to kind of share, you know, how I've been able to impact the space, and how I really call all professionals, regardless if you're a manager or not, to really embody this work. Fun facts about me is I love karaoke. I used to be on a competitive karaoke team. Shout out to LAK. Had to leave for reasons of just getting more busy with work and, of course, COVID and such, but definitely looking to get back into it. And I'm just someone, again, that's just passionate about giving back to my community, specifically in, you know, South Los Angeles, where I'm from.
Awesome. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Missy Elliott.
We'll start off with the hard-hitting questions.
I love it. Missy Elliott, Get Your Freak On. Like, oh. I had to learn it for a competition, and I mastered it. And so now it's like every time I go karaoke, I have to start with that. It's a hype. It's a crowd starter, and it's yes. A go-to.
I love it. So so Jackie and I and a few of our friends, I don't know if you've heard of the Work Human Conference, but we'll be at the Work Human Conference. And last year, a few folks did get into the karaoke competition. If you want, I think it was just karaoke, maybe not a competition. Jackie took it as a competition, and
I love it.
We'll need to do some sort of karaoke party at some point in the future so we can test out everyone's skills.
Let's do it. I'm with it. Like an inclusive AF karaoke party. That sounds
yes,
good.
Yes. Perfect. Okay. So I want to start off with your motto. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, we talk about on in the Inclusive AF podcast is just the we're having these conversations because we want other folks to learn, but it's also, we know that we don't know all the things. And so, you know, having guests like yourself on to share a little bit about yourself, a little bit about kind of what motivates you, what gets you excited. And I loved your motto. So I'm going to read it. Yeah. Live, learn, teach, pay it forward, and enjoy every moment like it is the last. So how did you come up with that? Where did you find that? What motivates you?
Great question. I appreciate you calling that out. For me, that motto really was born out of just my years of experience, right? To give a little bit more about my background, I did not start my career in this space. I started my career in a completely different capacity. I worked in the biotech industry for quite some time, coming out of my undergraduate program, which was in biology, which was many moons ago. I thought that my path was going to be to work for a clinical research institute, find the career to some disease, win my Pulitzer Prize, and then retire by the time I was 35. Definitely didn't happen, nowhere near. But at some point on my journey, I decided to make the pivot, right? And the reason why I wanted to make the pivot was I just happened to work for organizations where I was one of three, maybe one of two women of color. And although those organizations were great, kind of what they do from a product perspective, when it really came to enabling and empowering talent, and when it really came to empowering, you know, their diverse talent, they just fell short, right? And I didn't necessarily have the best experiences at those organizations. And so as I decided to completely pivot in this direction, which in all honesty, at the time of the pivot, I didn't really know what that was going to look like, or even that I was going to be here. I struggled. I struggled with it. I struggled with, you know, pretty much feeling like I was going to do one thing and that thing was not energizing me in the way that I thought it was going to. And now I need to figure out what was next for me. And so as I did all the soul searching and the networking and chatting with people, what really got me over the hump was understanding that life is all about experiences, right? We can throw ourselves into work or not throw ourselves into work. We can throw ourselves into family or not throw ourselves into family, but really, success is, for me personally, right? Success is really born out of the experience of embracing the moment, right? So what is this moment teaching me? What have all these struggles prepared me to do, right? And what is the greater purpose? So that's where kind of the live, learn, and teach came from, because for me, it's like life is a lifelong journey. I used to be married to this idea that you pick one thing and you stick with it, right? And once you're done with school, you're done learning. And we all know that that's not the case, right? Every day there's something to learn, there's something to gain, especially in the space of DEI and wanting to be more inclusive. The dance piece of the motto is I love to dance, hence the competitive karaoke. And I feel like when we think about the workspace and we feel like empowering folks to bring their authentic selves to work, how do we tap in some of the passions and the drivers and the motivators? And a lot of times it's not based on your professional experience. It's all the other things you bring to the table, right? And so that's where the dance piece, I'm one of those that I dance like no one is watching. You know, I incorporate music into everything that I do. And essentially it helps me be a better person. It also helps me be a better professional by being able to bring some of my other passions to the workplace. And then going back to the teach and pay it forward, I think it is very important that as we navigate the journey of life and as we continue to learn on what to do and what not to do, it is incredibly important to pass that on to those that are coming up, or even those that might be in the same situation. Whereas for me, it was pivoting and really in a helping folks understand that it's okay to want to pivot. It's okay when things are not working out the way that you want them to work out. And here's how I did it. And maybe I can be, you know, of inspiration to you. So I am a mentor to, you know, three amazing young ladies that grew up very similarly to me, women of color, from, you know, South Los Angeles, East Los Angeles. And it's really important to me that my legacy is not so much in what I accomplish in the form of accolades and how much money I make, but it really is about who I brought along. And, you know, the more coming from the community that I came from, where mentorship is very necessary and we don't always have mentors that look like us, right? Thinking about where I work, where financial literacy is definitely missing, and it's very important as we think about building generational wealth and creating equitable financial spaces, et cetera, that, you know, we all commit in some way, shape, or form to paying that forward so that we can create a better future for those that look like us that are coming up. So.
Awesome. Love it. And, you know, I think I want to touch on a few things that you just mentioned. And, you know, the first one is, you know, the pivot that you took, you know, going into a biotech space and then going completely in a different direction with, you know, DEI and kind of that space. You know, there is a lot of conversation right now about that exact topic, like the folks that are turning to, let's look at this space, let's see what else we can do. And, you know, so was that challenging for you? Was it, it sounds like obviously you did take a lot of time to think about it and figure out if this is really the right path, but what were the challenges for you in shifting?
Yeah, great question. So, yes, it was very challenging because when I decided to make the pivot, it actually wasn't DEI. It was corporate social responsibility. And what I didn't realize at the time is how I define culture, corporate social responsibility is actually culture and inclusion and engagement, right? So so take a step back and to provide more detail, when I decided to make the pivot, I decided to pursue my MBA full time. So I left the working world. It was the best 2 years of my life and fully immersed myself in a MBA program. And going into the program again, I was pursuing corporate social responsibility and via an opportunity to spend a summer at a company as a summer associate, I fell into the world of L&D and DEI. And originally it was L&D. It was an L&D specific role. However, when I stepped into the role, I quickly identified the inequities and the gaps, right, of how organizations even approach learning and development. Some organizations tend to approach learning and development in this one size fits all approach, right? How to give feedback, how to advocate for yourself, how to communicate. And what I noticed is that many, and still till this day, many forget about the nuances, right? And the impact that cultural upbringing has on how we communicate, how we advocate, how we give feedback. And when we have these organizations that have a very fixed definition of what that looks like from a success, you know, what success looks like, it's not a coincidence or it's not a surprise that we still see so many get left behind in that, right? And so what I started to do is I started to kind of weave in and embed the DEI lens in learning of, sure, we can say that here at X company, we want folks to be loud. We want folks to disrupt. We want folks to, you know, advocate for themselves and raise their hand for a promotion. But when I think about myself and my personal experience, I'm of Caribbean descent. I should have added that in my intro. And I grew up in a culture where you're seen and not heard. So what do you mean challenge authority? What do you mean give feedback? Like, that is foreign to me. And it's, as someone as seasoned as I am, it's still uncomfortable for me to have to navigate those conversations and advocate for myself. So the challenge arises for me kind of in the beginning of how do I get managers to really understand and embrace that cultural upbringing impacts us in the workplace. So how do we, of course, use these frameworks that are great, but also speak to the nuances of who is on our team without tokenizing, without doing the extreme of creating these like specific tailored programs that often also miss the mark. So what I quickly did in my career is I decided that I was going to approach this work through the lens of allyship and through the lens of empowerment, right? So on one side of the coin, I'm empowering folks that maybe naturally can't operate the way organizations tend to reward people, right? And coaching and mentoring and developing that group of folks to kind of meet in the middle. And then also working with leaders and hiring managers and decision makers to also understand that these nuances exist, right? And so how do you thoughtfully and strategically ensure that as we build more frameworks, as we build more programs, as we build you know, more policies and initiatives, that we're kind of both meeting each other in the middle so that we can, of course, hold folks accountable, but we can also incorporate the nuances that cultural upbringing often brings.
I think that is brilliant. And I want to emphasize what I heard you say, because I think this is something that often gets missed. A lot of times it's, oh, we need to coach and teach folks that are in that underrepresented group or in that marginalized group to right. basically assimilate versus right. let's teach the leaders how to actually be able to function with people that are different. And that could be any number of differences, you know, like, you know, you just mentioned folks that are very outgoing and very gregarious. Right. And if you have someone that's introverted or quieter, how do you lead them? You know, any number of things. So I love the approach of kind of hitting it both ways, because I one of the things when I first got started in this work, I would get very frustrated by the, well, we need to teach women of color, right. how to take up more space in a room and how right. to, you know, have their voice and all these things. And I'm like, cool, but we can't, and they can't, because right. it will be shut down and it will be their problem employee, or they're too loud, or they're too much.
Right.
So I'm glad you're taking that approach.
Yeah, definitely. And to piggyback off what you said, it's interesting because folks will always say that, right? Well, we need to teach the how, but it's like, well, have you taught yourself on how to receive, right? Mm-hmm. Because in one spirit, you're saying that you want folks to be louder and bring the bold ideas and challenge, but I'm watching and I'm seeing, you know, sometimes not even overtly, but very covertly, mm-hmm. how you're responding and reacting when you have an expectation of someone to operate in a specific manner and they're doing everything you told them to do, or they're doing everything that they're observing you do, and it's off-putting for you, right? So that has essentially been, you know, the bread and butter of my work. And as you can imagine, it has come with its challenges of, you know, striking that healthy balance and ensuring that, you know, folks on this side, aka leaders, managers, and decision makers, are kind to themselves and understand that there is no A+, there is no study guide, there will be missteps, and really the learning is the feedback and receiving the feedback and pledging to do better. And on the other side, it's stepping up, challenging yourself, but also giving a little bit of grace on what your manager, your leader may not know, and being comfortable giving that feedback. And again, creating that healthy balance, and still haven't completely figured it out, but we're on the journey to get there.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think a lot of folks in this space are having the conversation around intent versus impact.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that's something that folks maybe are not as familiar with. And so, you know, I think what you're sharing is exactly that, that, you know, you want to say, yes, positive intent, this is what they right. meant, or this is what they're trying to say, but also knowing that there's going to be missteps and that impact that it has on whoever is the focus or whoever it's, you know, whoever's receiving that
right.
can be damaging and can be traumatizing. And it's that, you know, ongoing stuff. So thank you. Thank you for taking that on and, you know, making that a priority to kind of teach both sides to that, because it is critical.
Absolutely.
I would love to hear a little bit about, you know, just the way that you approach, and especially in a place like NerdWallet. So and I'm making some assumptions here, so please clarify if I'm wrong, but
sure.
You know, financial knowledge, I think, is something that they're not teaching in school the way that we would hope that they would.
Right.
But I think it's even more of an issue for folks that are in underserved communities and in underserved schools. And so would love to hear kind of the approach as you think about D&I, and obviously CSR is a huge piece of that. You know, like, how do you think about that corporate social responsibility and the actual, like, what NerdWallet does for a living and what, you know, what their product is?
Great question. So I want to add the caveat that I have been at NerdWallet a little over 3 months, right? So I'm still learning and still ramping up. However, I can answer that question from both lenses, from leading this work here and what I've seen so far, and also as a consumer, right? Like, I was a consumer of NerdWallet well before, I was blessed with this opportunity. And so the responsibility and the commitment that I have seen the company take, and I also think the company should continue to take, is really, again, embedding DEI in everything that we do, both from the internal perspective, right? So ensuring that we have the right perspectives on the team that can speak to our community, right? So having diverse voices that write our content, that think about our business development, that think about our product, again, to ensure that we are representative of the community that we serve. And then taking that a step further from a CSR perspective, which is, you know, continuing to support external initiatives, and NerdWallet does a great job at this, of supporting external initiatives that are focused on reducing the, what I call the financial literate gap. Something that I would love to focus on this year with our employee resource groups is really thinking about how can we continue to teach, right, through the lens of our community, because we are not the end all be all when it comes to the communities that we represent, right? And we're not 100% representative because there's a lot of nuances within community, but we have a general idea, right, of where the gaps are. And so how do we continue to support the organization in finding those opportunities to teach and finding those opportunities to speak to the nuances, right? I think about credit cards, you know, something personally for me is I have always been very responsible with my money, but I really realize that financial responsibility for me was just saving for a rainy day, right? I never had the conversation around growing your money. Mm-hmm. And so I, for the longest time, had a credit card that didn't generate any points. And when I started to really think about, okay, how do I grow my money? How do I expand, you know, the little wealth that I have? NerdWallet was one of the first places I went to for an article, and they wrote an article around points and how do you essentially leverage your credit card to make money. So make money while you're spending money. And it was such a foreign concept for me because I grew up in a household where my mom just started using her credit card. And I grew up in a household where it was like cash only, debit card only, do not use a credit card, all debt is bad. And so those are the things that I had to essentially unlearn. And luckily I had, you know, a resource like NerdWallet that showed me the how, but I think the gap that exists is even driving folks to seek out that information, right? If you grow up in a household where you're told debt is bad, don't use credit cards, use cash only, you're not going to know to go to, for example, NerdWallet to then look up what credit cards to get, right? So really figuring out those touch points to find the gaps of even leading folks to what we offer and leading folks to, you know, the empowerment and the financial resources. Hopefully that makes sense, but that's just where my head is at.
No, absolutely. And it's reminding me of someone. So you probably know the Budgetnista. So Tiffany.
Yes, I love her.
Yeah. And I loved her book. I love everything she has done. And I think it's been so interesting because it's opened my eyes, obviously just a learning for my own personal self, same thing that you're talking about of like, how do you actually make your, you know, have your money, make more money, right. Points, things like that, you know, just thinking about that type of stuff, but also just very down to earth. And I think the more we can make these conversations just a part of our everyday existence and, you know, and it reminds me of, you know, you don't, when at the dinner table, you don't talk about money, religion, or sex, you know, right. Those things. And so for so many of us, we didn't learn from our parents other than what we observed of, oh, they don't use credit cards. They only pay in cash. They think this is bad. And how do you actually learn? Well, I need to have this to establish credit to, you know, all of the pieces that come into play. So she's one that I do follow and really appreciate all of her insights. I think they're great.
Yeah, 100%, 100% agree. And so what we would like to do as a company is essentially find ways to lead people to those resources, right? And it's like, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So how do we very thoughtfully and intentionally share with people what they don't know, right? So demystifying some of the things that we learned growing up.
Imagine how fast we could solve the world's biggest problems if more SaaS startups would gain traction sooner. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. This podcast is dedicated to sharing experiences from B2B SaaS CEOs who are going above and beyond to deliver change that is noticed. You will hear their secrets and learn what is required to build a SaaS business that the world starts talking about and keeps talking about, and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so.
Yeah, there was a show on Netflix, and I think she actually was one of the people on it, and it was about like, you know, creating generational wealth and just, again, these conversations that folks aren't having or don't know to have. And not just within, you know, marginalized communities, but just across the board that we aren't taught. I mean, I remember back in high school, and this is going to age me slightly, it's you had to balance your checkbook.
Yeah.
And that was like what they taught you. And that was the most important thing. And you think about that now and you're like, I can just go online and look at my account and see what's going on and see where, and it categorizes everything for me. It tells me, hey, stop spending money on Uber Eats because it's ridiculous, you know?
For me, it's DoorDash, girl, so I hear
you. Absolutely. So I want to shift a little bit because, you know, one of the things, you know, about, you know, this inclusive company culture is, you know, and we've seen this very recently come up with some of the layoffs that have occurred that DEI folks have been impacted and that DEI has been, you know, kind of put on the back burner. And I don't know if you've saw any of the stuff with the SVB fallout. There's comments now about, oh, it's because they were focused on diversity and woke culture, which is the most ridiculous thing. But I would love to know kind of the, how do you think about not making it a check the box, you know, activity to really make it real and a part of your culture?
Yeah, great question. And this is something I think about all the time. And it's interesting that you brought up, you know, SVB and that fallout. I did not see the article, anything around the blame on DEI, which I think is ridiculous. And after this, I will definitely go and look that up because I think that's the furthest from
it. Will make you slightly angry, but it's also good to know because like someone, there's been a lot of now responses to it on LinkedIn of like, this might be the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Right. It's like, we're going to correlate people pulling their money out to, you know, woke culture and DEI. Great. Wonderful.
Yeah, correlate. But anyhow, sorry.
No, all good. So how I think about this, and again, I think about this a lot, is if we are going to move from what I call reactive to proactive, right? It is really important to embed it within every facet of the organization and not look at it as just a siloed internal strategy, right? Or an internal program, which is why for me, when I see organizations have a program manager, as an example, running DEI as opposed to somebody that's embedded into leadership. So, I mean, senior manager plus, I always go, I'm looking at the scope of what this person does. And it can be easy when times get hard to dispose of this role because you're viewing it as a program as opposed to a necessary strategic entity to your business, not only in how you keep your employees engaged, but also how you drive your business forward. Because again, most businesses serve a global community or a diverse community, and you want to make sure that you have the right perspectives to speak to that audience. So what I love to compare it to is finance, right? Every organization has a finance arm, a finance owner, a finance vertical. Of course, every team member, every group, every department owns their budget and they own a component of finance, right? But they're still a team that drives those initiatives. And so I look at DEI in the exact same way, right? It's like you may have a team that drives DEI, but if we're really going to ensure that we're creating equitable and inclusive workspaces, everyone needs to take ownership. And we have to think about everything we do through the lens of DEI. So how I've seen it done in the past and how we currently do it, you know, at NerdWallet is we embed it in how are we evaluating performance, right? How are we compensating people? How are we diversifying our content to speak to different audiences, right? And how are we really thinking about the long-term success of the business through the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion? And in a recent conversation, someone asked me, you know, how do I feel about the deprioritization of DEI? And also, how do I feel about the weaponization of the terms diversity, equity, inclusion, aka what they're calling woke culture? And I often, when I see content or I hear people speak or I hear, you know, even some politicians like build their platforms on this sentiment or these notions, I often want to ask, and obviously I can't ask everyone this question, is how are you defining diversity, equity, and inclusion? Because in its purest form, it just means that we're creating a diverse workplace, again, that can speak to the audience that we serve. We are focusing on ensuring that everyone that works at our organization feels inclusive, feels like, you know, they have what they need to succeed. And arguably that applies to everyone, right? So why wouldn't you want to focus on that? Why wouldn't you want to have that in your organization? And so To add a little bit more to your question, I think folks really need to start shifting their mindset, right? Of DEI should not just be an initiative. It should not just be a program. It really should be a necessary in an organization because, again, arguably, you want everyone that works for you to feel included, right? So it becomes a more of a why wouldn't we have this as opposed to do we need this? You know, so the question needs to be, why wouldn't we have this or why don't we have this? As opposed to like, oh, things, you know, financially, we're not doing well. Should we cut this? It's like, no, that should be non-negotiable, right? Because even if you have 50 people left, you want all 50 of those people to feel a sense of inclusion. And that's on all of us to create that. So.
Absolutely. I love that. And, you know, I think that's one of the biggest pieces that I'm seeing with some of these changes and some of these layoffs is that, yeah, it is and I feel the exact same way. It needs to be woven into everything you do. But I think that's also how you break down some of the systemic issues that we know are happening.
Right.
To think about it from this inclusive mindset. And yeah, everyone's included. That isn't a, so this now means white males aren't included. Absolutely right. Not. You know, like, you're also a part of this conversation and you also need to understand kind of, and I won't even go with the, you know, the privilege that they have or anything like that, but just, you have to understand how the world works, how the US works, especially around these things. And to deny that, it cracks me up when people are like, oh, woke culture. And you're like, so you're saying not being informed is better than being informed. Like that's,
you're saying you want to go to sleep all day, every day. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Anyhow. So how do you think about that? And, you know, think about embedding DEI into every piece of the culture. You know, I know you just gave an example of like finance, but how else, like, what are the things that you would want folks to think about or consider?
Yeah. So, great question. So for me, it's, I always say hire and manage through the lens of the perspective gap, right? So being able to identify what are the perspective gaps on the team? What are the perspectives missing? Again, because most or all organizations want to be successful, right? And having an MBA, the one thing that I embed in how I approach this work is the business, right? Being able to speak to the business, being able to drive the business forward. Because you and I know that investing in diversity, equity, inclusion is the right thing to do, right? But in order to bring everyone on board, similar to other functions within an organization, you also have to speak through the lens of the business, right? And so what I coach as well. So when I'm coaching leaders around how do we effectively embed this into overall strategy and, you know, within the organization is, again, thinking about the business and what are the business objectives and what are the perspectives missing on the team to speak to those business objectives. I also love to use case studies. So I'm always throwing out examples of where organizations have fallen short, right? By thinking that having a team that is very homogenous, regardless of how you slice that, can speak to a global audience, right? And how almost all of the missteps that we have seen, and I won't name them, could have been prevented if they had specific groups in the room that would have said, hey, you might want to switch the shirts on the two little boys that we're going to feature in this campaign, right? And things of that nature. So really starting with, let's think about the business, let's think about our core audience, and let's think about what are the perspective gaps missing to enable our success to said audience. I then take it a step further, Katie, and I am very big on meeting people where they are and helping people understand that if we're limiting how we're defining this work to specific groups of people, we're really running the risk of not embracing that inclusion. Like I just mentioned, like we just mentioned, applies to everyone, right? So I lead a series. It's an inclusion series where it's all about normalizing inclusion in the workplace and helping folks really identify personally with the space, right? So one that I've led at a previous company was around how do we normalize inclusion in the workplace by demystifying the archetype. Right? It was a very specific and unique company where the talent was very specific, so they said, right? And there was a lot of bias towards where to recruit from, who to recruit, that not only skewed one way from a racial and gender perspective, but it also skewed a particular way in terms of tech versus non-tech, traditional versus non-traditional, which incorporates the majority, right? The group that was, you know, pretty much centered in was the majority. And so by helping them understand that if we are not identifying what we perceive as good and then working to unpack that and demystify that, here are all the people that get left behind, and that includes you too, right? And so if we're truly, and how I think about this, if we're truly going to embed it in every facet of the organization, we have to start from like the ground up of really helping folks identify with the work, understand ways that they could potentially be othered and they could potentially be left behind and not in the way that we hear it, like, oh, replacement theory and all these things, right? But in a way of like, why then should I be invested to embed it in everything that I do? Because here are all the perspectives that I'm missing, and here are all the ways that I could be more successful if I enable these perspectives, as opposed to what we're seeing now, where it's like, it's mutually exclusive, right? If I am focused on hiring more people of color, that means that, you know, people that don't identify as a person of color are going to get left behind, right? And it's like, no, it's mutually inclusive. As we focus on hiring more people of color, not only are we better as an organization because people of color make up a good chunk of the world, but we are also learning. We're also identifying gaps in the system that we don't realize if we're not, I'm a person of color, but by we, I mean, you know, folks that are not a person of color, are missing out on, right? And there are so, anyways, very long-winded answer to essentially how I think about this space and how I approach the work is foundational empathy. What are the business drivers? And then what are the perspective gaps missing? And how do we fill those perspective gaps?
Love it. And I want to go back to the kind of company strategy and, you know, that piece, because I think this is, I'm actually in the job search myself right now. And one of the questions I've been asking folks is, how is DEI woven into your corporate strategy? Mm-hmm. And if they're like, you know, look at me puzzled or like, what are you talking about? That's obviously a very good indicator of kind of where they're at,
right?
Which is okay. Cause again, right, you know, part of this is learning and growing, but it is also 2023. So there should be some thought about it.
Right.
And so I would love for you to talk a little bit more about just the actual, you know, making this a strategic part of the business. Mm-hmm. And you've touched on it a little bit before, but would love to know any, you know, any additional thoughts you have on that, because I think it's such a critical piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, great question. Number one, leadership buy-in, right? And buy-in all the way at the top to not only want to create space for DEI, but to also hold themselves and the rest of the organization accountable to driving the work forward, right? And so where I have seen this done, but I shouldn't say where, how I have seen this done best is when this function has a seat at the table, like all core functions, right? And from overall company priority standpoint, overall company OKRs and overall company business objectives, right, incorporate some facet of, you know, what we call DEI, but I just like to say inclusive and equitable practices. And so looking at it at all levers of internal engagement, looking at it from a product standpoint, looking at it from a revenue standpoint, right, and looking at it from a CSR standpoint is really the way that it will fully be embedded, and it becomes a very successful strategic focus because it shifts the ownership from a central capacity, right, to more of a co-opted initiative. And so shout out to, again, NerdWallet. Something that we focus on here is creating equitable workspaces. And that initiative is very cross-functional, right? Where we have leaders from all facets of the organization really look at their vertical and think about, you know, what are our overall pillars as a company? And we have an ESG report for anyone that is curious, where we go into a little bit more detail around, you know, again, the approach. But coming into this company, again, being so new, it is very refreshing and rewarding to see, right, how we've been able to get to where we are now as a company happening was because it's more of a co-opted strategy as opposed to a centralized strategy, where again, folks across the organization look at it from a CSR perspective, look at it from a supplier diversity perspective, look at it from a recruiting perspective, look at it from a marketing perspective, to ensure that again, central DEI, aka myself and my team, help with the coaching and the guiding and the setting of overall strategy. But when it comes to implementation and execution and the embedding, we have an all hands on deck approach where we have multiple leaders and multiple stakeholders taking this as their own.
I love it. Do you have thoughts on where DEI should report into?
You might be surprised to know that not all serial killers are straight, cisgender white men. And the victims of true crime are not a monolith either. She's Wendy and I'm Beth. And together we host Fruit Loop's Serial Killers of Color, a true crime podcast.
Together we take deep dives into the true crime stories about marginalized and minoritized perps and victims that often go untold.
We also provide the context and nuance that these stories deserve. At Fruit Loops, we're serving up true crime with a side of history, society, culture, and some fun.
Listen to Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Such a good question. such a good question, because I personally have had it sit in many different places. So let me think. Which one do I feel like was the most successful? If I am being honest about this, I don't think it matters, right? Because again, I don't think that it should ever be siloed, nor do I think that because it sits in a very specific space, place, vertical, department, however you want to, define it or call it, that should change the approach, right? That should change how people view it, right? I've seen it sit under a CEO and report directly into a CEO, and I've seen the pros and cons of that. And I've also seen it sit in HR capacity, reporting to a CHRO or a chief people officer, and I see the pros and cons of that. And I don't necessarily think that having it sit, I know some people advocate for it to actually sit under a CEO as a way of making it more important or signaling that it's more important to an organization. I don't necessarily think that makes it better. If anything, I've actually seen more cons with that approach. So what I will say is, again, it shouldn't matter, right? I don't think it should matter where it sits. I think just having a commitment to creating a diverse, equitable, and inclusive environment and fostering that sense of belonging really should be enough to drive folks to own that commitment. Now, what I will add, though, in terms of where it should report into, is regardless of who the DEI team reports into, I do think the more leadership accountability and the more of a leadership voice that we hear definitely enables success. And I've been fortunate enough to work for an organization where, even though I sat with human resources, the CEO was very invested in the space and treated me like an additional direct report, right? And proactively asked to spend time with me monthly and get a download of where are we headed, how are things going, what he can do to support. And that paid dividends versus when I worked for an organization where I didn't report into the more central D&I. Actually was more siloed into a specific function, but the organization had a central D&I team, and I didn't necessarily see a marginal difference in ownership, right? Where I saw the ownership was when we saw specific leaders really champion the work. Yeah. So,
and I think that goes to, you mentioned.
That was a great question. I actually never thought about that. That was a great question.
Well, and the reason why I asked, we had a guest on a few weeks ago, and Jackie and I were passing back this article, and it was actually a group that they had HR report into the diversity team.
Mm.
Which I was like, now that is very, very interesting, because then you actually get to see how policies, processes, procedures change when you have that very distinct lens on it.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. But to your point, if you have that credibility, if you have those relationships, you can still drive that work. Right. And so I think that's the other piece is that, you know, for so many folks, and, you know, this is something that I'm sure, you know, Aubrey Blanche, she talks about quite a bit is the, it doesn't matter if you are the DEI person, what mm-hmm. is your role in mm-hmm. this work?
Right.
And I think that's something that we just need to continue to talk about is how are you as a frontline leader? How are you as an individual contributor? How are you, you know, getting involved with your ERG or whatever it might be?
Right.
And so the next question or the next kind of what I would love to know is for NerdWallet, do they have executive sponsors for your ERGs or is it one, you know, everyone, you know, kind of everyone reports into the CEO? How does that work?
Great question. So yes, all of our ERGs have executive sponsors. Our executive sponsors do report into our CEO, and ultimately our executive sponsors are great brokers and advocates for our ERGs around providing coaching, providing guidance, but also removing blockers. You know, what I've seen so far is we have ERGs that may have used up most of their budget and they are very comfortable going to their executive sponsor and saying, hey, we want to do a talk. Here's the impact. You know, can you support? And I've seen our executive sponsor step in and say, let me know. And they'll reach out to me or partner with me and say, let me know how I can support, how I can help. If you want me to proactively be an advocate and go to our finance team, I'm happy to do so. So we have a very engaged executive sponsor ship team. And it also helps that they report, you know, they're at the highest level within the organization because they also support in cascading down the efforts of our employee resource groups to ensure that even if folks aren't a part of an employee resource group or don't happen to identify as, you know, the community that the employee resource group serves, they still feel the desire and understand the expectations to still participate. So.
Awesome. And you just mentioned something else that I think I would say, I don't like to use the word harp on, but we do, you know, talk about quite a bit is budgets, mm-hmm. budgets for this work and actually making sure that there's some financial momentum behind the work. Because I think so many of us in the space, we figured out how to find free or cheap or whatever stuff.
Right.
But it's also how do we actually put the money where our mouth is and, you know, make sure our ERG leaders are getting what they need and getting compensated for that kind of off the clock work,
right?
All of those things. And I'm glad to hear that you guys are focused on that. And that is something that is important to you. So I would love to chat with you for another 3 to 4 hours, or we definitely need to do this again with Jackie. I would love to just kind of end this episode by asking you, you know, what are one or two things, we really hope you hear this, or what are the things that you would like to pass along to folks that are listening?
Yeah, great, great question. So what I would love to share with folks that are listening is things are changing right now. Right. And I'm fortunate to work for an organization that is very committed to this space and again, embedding this work in everything that we do. However, the reality is there is a lot of deprioritization happening. There is a lot of weaponization happening. There are a lot of conversations around erasure and all the things where, quite frankly, sometimes it feels like, are we going backwards in time? Like, am I in a time machine? Because I'm really confused on what's happening right now. And so when folks ask, like, you know, well, what do I do when I've worked for an organization that deprioritized the team, right? Or what do I do when I live in a state where, you know, as a teacher, I can't talk about certain things or I can't teach in the way that I want to, et cetera. And what I always share is, and what I'll leave the audience is, focus on the micro, right? Regardless of what's happening at the macro, when we think about creating an inclusive and equitable environment, it starts with us, right? So even if I work for an organization that for whatever reason has made the decision to deprioritize, not just DEI, right? Because learning and development, you know, we've seen has been deprioritized, a lot of facets of culture and engagement and all the things that make, you know, workplaces great have been deprioritized. What can I do as an individual? And it's like, you can still advocate for somebody. Mm-hmm. You can still source diverse talent, right? Without an overarching team. You can still speak up and say, hey, Katie had a really great idea in this meeting. And I noticed that she's been fighting to share her idea and no one's paying attention, right? And so really thinking about what are the small things that I can do as an individual every day that in turn creates an inclusive and equitable environment, regardless of what's happening in the macro space. And so challenging everyone listening and continuing to challenge myself to find those touch points of like, how can I as an individual, regardless of funding, budget, whatever that looks like, create space for others to feel heard, to feel seen, and to do their best work. So that's what I'll leave everyone with.
Awesome. Thank you. And for me, I think the pieces that really resonated with, everything that you shared was amazing. And I appreciate you taking the time. I think it's good, and I love that you are really thinking about the product of NerdWallet and how that actually impacts individuals and how you can broaden your customer base and truly make it a business priority. Because I think that's something that sometimes it's hard to think about that when you're in the trenches trying to just make sure your people are okay. Right. But thinking about the product itself and making sure that you're being thoughtful about who are you serving, right, and who's not in the room to talk or give an opinion or share. Yeah, that's not the right shirt for that person to wear. The other person, right, needs, or whatever it might be, or do not actually make this a product of ours because it is not okay. Right. So I think that for me is what it really came through, and I hope that everyone heard. And again, thank you so much for being with us. And one additional thing that I'll share with our listeners, and hopefully you all are paying attention to all of the absolutely ridiculous bills and legislation and conversations that are happening about anti-trans education and, right, health services, all of these different things, gender affirming care. And please speak to your representatives, please, right, call them, please write them, please knock on their door and let them know this is not okay. We need to create safe spaces for our kids and for everyone.
Absolutely.
We know that women of color that are trans are basically right now being hunted, and right, we need, right, to save lives. Right. And this legislation will not do that. And so we need to just pay attention to what's going, right, on.
100%. And I'll add to that, we are each other's business, right? So even, mm-hmm, if you think or feel like what's happening doesn't impact you, doesn't mean that it can't and it won't later on in the future. And you have to remember that folks that go after a specific group, you might be next on the list, right? And if we can step up and advocate for those groups, right, not only do we support as allies of those groups, we also in turn ensure that it doesn't happen to anyone else. So I will add that.
Awesome. Thank you. I truly appreciate you taking the time. This has been phenomenal. And,
it's been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. We will share this out with our guests or with our listeners. And we appreciate you being a guest on the Inclusive AF podcast. This is Katie Van Horn, and we'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Have a good one, everyone. Bye.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years' experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding, or seeking. Feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app, or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.